Thursday, July 30th, began with the news that Senator Claire Engle had died. I called Lou, who's lived an endurance contest this last year, and this can only mean release for Claire and for her. In the middle of the morning, I met with a task force for the proposed Women's Job Corps, a part of the war against poverty. These women, about 100 of them, have come from all over the nation for workshops on how to get the job done for the proposed Women's Job Corps, which would take care of 10 or 15,000 girls, school dropouts, girls who've had bad home lives, girls from city slums, who would live in residential centers, and spend about a year receiving instruction in some sort of vocational job training and also in cooking and grooming and good citizenship. Jean Noble is a spearhead of it, an able, attractive Negro professor from New York University. Excellent choice. Among the 100 were such women as Martha Allen of the Campfire Girls, Ms. William Cooper from the National Council of Jewish Women, Dr. June Bricker, whom I had met at the American Home Economics Association, Mrs. William Hasbrook of the General Federation of Women's Clubs, Ms. Dorothy Height, National Council of Negro Women, Dorothy Ford of the NBNPW, Helen Harris of the United Neighborhood Houses, Margaret Mealy of the National Council of Catholic Women, Mary Jane Willett of the YWCA, and my old friend Dr. Bernice Moore of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health at the University of Texas. Women from many universities. Of course, all of the interested branches of governments, such as Jane Wirtz from Labor, Ann Celebrezze from HEW, Mary Kiesling, India Edwards, Katie Lockheim, the ubiquitous Esther Peterson. Jean Noble described them as the women's power structure of the United States, and in a way they really represent many thousands of women and their thinking. The setting was lovely, underneath the large trees on one of the mounds designed by Thomas Jefferson. Garden furniture here and there, and tables covered with hot and iced coffee and pastries. And the meeting was exciting to me because it was a good explanation of their purpose by Jean Noble and then a give and take of questions and then the clincher by Representative Edith Green, who said you won't have any job corps to work on unless you go back and phone your congressman and tell them you want to get this poverty bill passed. It was a plus and I liked it. Next, I had a session with Walter. Half a dozen letters too tough for me to handle. Then lunch in my room while I worked on my mail. And then a little rest before tea in the yellow oval room for the wives of the Latin American ambassadors and the OAS ambassadors, a group of about 60, with Virginia Rusk, Nancy Mann, and Robin Duke arriving early to brief me on the best way to let us get acquainted in an hour's time. The singing strings played in the hall. The ladies came by and said hello. And then I took my seat in the end of the oval room while Robin skillfully brought over groups of 4 or 5 at a time. And we had about 10 or 15 minutes conversation while Nancy and Virginia took the others on trips through the Lincoln Room, Treaty Room, and Queen's Bedroom. Meanwhile, a succession of new ones came to me, brought by Robin. Lyndon came in for just a moment, making his way quickly around the floor, shaking hands and greeting most of them. All the ladies were interested in the White House's latest art acquisition, the John Singer Sargent, given in honor of President Kennedy. And also, I'm delighted to say, our own Lyndon's letter from George Washington to Thomas Law, written in 1799, inviting him to come to the wedding of Nellie Custis. The tea went off with almost military precision and without the intimacy and real breakthrough in getting to know you that I would like. I think the presence of my Spanish class, Bethine, Grace, June White, Abigail, helped some. But by 5:15, they were all gone, leaving me with a somewhat frustrated feeling, unlike this morning's feeling, that it was a real exchange. But the day was a long time from over. Back at my desk in my room, I got an SOS from downstairs. Lennon had been having a reception for 300 educators, superintendents of schools in large cities. They'd had a workshop, were going to have a question and answer period later, were at present having refreshments in the state dining room. He'd greeted them all, made a speech, but had to leave after about 20 minutes. Could I stop down and lend a little hospitality and warmth? I could. and with an aide made my way from one end to the other, with some interesting encounters, among them the son of the head of the Houston school system, Dr. Oberholzer, for whom Lyndon had worked, and who had given him a leave of absence which Lyndon had carried in his purse for the first 2 or 3 years of our married life, until the paper practically wore out, saying, "Someday I'm going back to teaching." And another encounter, one of the heads of the New York City school system, which included all the Harlem schools. From there, I went to the Woodrow Wilson House on S Street to open the American Landmarks Celebration and to give to Gordon Gray of the National Trust for Historic Preservation a plaque designating this house as a National Historic Landmark in front of about 200 people gathered on the lawn and terrace. I thought about how many times I'd driven past that house for the last 25 years, pointing it out to tourists. But this is the first time I'd been through it. There was a flag created for the League of Nations with high hopes, but never adopted. Pictures of Marshall Foch, John Pershing, all the King and Queen of England. Saw the magnificent Gobelin tapestry. It was the gift from the French government to Wilson when he was a god in that day, almost, the day of his triumphant tour in Europe after the armistice, before the cheering stopped. The diplomatic corps was there in good quantity, including, remarkably, a goodly number from the Iron Curtain countries. Back at the White House again, I went for a walk around the South Grounds, and hopefully, but ineffectually, to Lyndon's office, trying to prise him loose. But it was after 10 before he came home for dinner with Mary Margaret and Jack, and Lyndon and Dave sat down with us, because I want deliberately to get to know him better. And after dinner, while Lyndon had his massage, Dave and Linda and I went off to the pool, jumped in. It's deliciously warm again. I had 20 laps, so relaxing, the best exercise, and then upstairs to bed in my own room, because I was too bone weary to last out Lyndon's reading until 2 o'clock, asking him to please come join me when he could. It strains me to know how early he gets up and how late he goes to bed. But there's a limit to how far I can follow him usefully.